September 2015, I'm traveling through the Rogue Valley where Mary Quart lives. Mary hiked the Bigfoot Trail this summer. And Mary, thanks for taking the time to talk with me about the trail.
Oh, thank you. I really enjoy meeting you after meeting you at the book signings and REI and stuff like that.
So you hiked this summer. When did you hike the trail?
I started on July 24th, and I finished my hike on August 24th.
And so how did you decide to get out and hike the Bigfoot Trail?
Well, I had actually bought your book, Conifer Country, and I was looking for trails to do around the area where I lived, which is Ashland. And I'm a big fan of doing long-distance trails, so I saw that there was a long-distance trail, the Bigfoot Trail, at the end of your book, and I thought, wow, that'd be really cool to hike that.
And so you've hiked other trails before. You're a long-distance hiker, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, I finished the Pacific Crest Trail and the Continental Divide Trail through New Mexico. And then I've done the Grand Enchantment Trail, the Arizona Trail, and half of the Hayduke Trail last spring, and 200 miles of the Appalachian Trail since I've been retired.
That's a pretty impressive list right there. Those are some hardy trails. You've obviously have a lot of experience with long distance hiking. How did your experiences on the Bigfoot Trail compare to some of those other routes?
Well, I think that the Bigfoot Trail is definitely a high caliber trail. It was comparable to me to hiking maybe the Grand Enchantment Trail. There was route finding. You did not see a lot of other people. You got to see some little-known sections of wildernesses that I would not have gone to otherwise. And there was an ulterior motive, and that was to identify the conifers of the area.
So you've got a history with trees. You've worked with trees and fire for the Forest Service for many years. Tell us how maybe your training as a fire ecologist with the Forest Service was reflected in the hike. What did you see along the way in terms of fire? I know fire affected a lot of your time in the field or on the trail this summer.
Well, it was something that I should have anticipated, but I didn't. But I know better now. There was lots of fires around Hay Fork, and that was where I started my career as a firefighter in 1977. But more importantly, I was really impressed by the effects of fire in the Russian wilderness. I was anticipating like a nuked area, and my friends were all going, "Oh my God, Russian Lake is all burned up," but it was not true.
This was because of the White's Fire last year.
Yeah, White's Fire last year. And so I told them I would make a report of what it was like, so I went down there, and the fire down past Russian Lakes, a couple miles down, I was just ecstatic, because as someone who has done prescribed fires in the Sierras and in other areas, if I would have done that prescribed burn, it would have been considered a total success, because it was... It burned small diameter fuels that add to the fire danger. It burned those up. It left large fuels. There was plenty of small conifers that were seedlings that were coming up, and then it also left all the large diameter trees. So I thought it was like a picture perfect fire effects walk.
That's a great description. I think what's most impressive about that description is you celebrating fire, but then at the same time, fire stopped you twice along the route, stopped you both in Hay Fork and at the last 50 miles through the Siskiyou Wilderness. So tell us a little bit about your experience in either Hay Fork or ending in the Siskiyou, having to call your hike short in the Siskiyous.
Well, in Hay Fork, I got up to the Bramlett Road, and I was walking the six-mile road walk down to Highway 3, I think. It's Highway 3.
Yeah.
And I didn't think much of the fires going on, because I could see a fire close to where I was walking above the Bramlett Road, and the smoke wasn't very thick. It wasn't doing very much. And I saw Forest Service fire engines going into the fire, and so I didn't think anything of it. But later on in the afternoon, when the wind kicked up, I turned around and I looked behind me, and I saw that the fire was blowing up, basically. There was a huge smoke column that had been gone horizontal from the wind. And so I decided to leave the Bigfoot Trail, and luckily I had maps that I could find my way out to Highway 3, and I walked down the paved road, and then I made contact with someone who was actually his house is in danger of burning, and so he was down there and he was evacuating, and so his name is Phil Kearney. Thank you, Phil. He said, why don't you come with me, and I have a place to stay for the night where a bunch of us are going to stay, you know, to be safe. And so I went with him, an amazing full moon that night, and we drove around the other side of Hayfork that wasn't closed, the road wasn't closed, and we stayed at Pat Anderson's ranch, and I'll never forget that. I mean, with amazing kindness of people, and it was true. It was really amazing. And then I was stopped at Siskiyou Wilderness at Poker Flat Trailhead because there was a fire called the Bear Fire that had closed all of the trails south of the Poker Flat Trailhead.
And so you said that they are actually keeping that trail closed for the rest of this year because they're going to let this fire burn naturally.
Well, that is my estimation as someone who has managed these kind of fires. And that is that when I was stopped by the fire closure back in August, the fire was 39% contained, and now it's only 46% contained, and it's almost, a month later. I think that what they're doing is letting the fire spread into the wilderness, and they're protecting all the other, they're doing suppression tactics on the rest of the fire, and so they're not going to declare the fire out and make the trail accessible because it's closed right now until they have a season-ending event, like enough precipitation to make them declare the fire out in that area.
Wow. So you hiked the trail for the trees. You brought a tree guide along, which I was very impressed to hear. And you also identified 30 of the 32 conifer species along the way. So I guess the first question is, what are the two you missed?
Oh, yeah, I'm ashamed. I was determined to get all of them. Well, I missed the noble fir, and I just didn't pick it. It was in the Yolaboli Wilderness, and I missed it going through there. And also the Baker cypress, I did the side trip over Huckleberry Mountain to go look for it, but it was in the headwaters of this drainage, and I didn't have time to go down there and actually look for it. I had to make it to a place to camp that had water, Cold Springs Camp, before I went into Syed Valley. But I actually gave it the old college try, you know, and I tried to do it. And so those are the only two, and I hope to see. I know that Michael says that I can see noble fir in Young's Valley.
Poker Flat. Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah.
I should be able to see it there when I go back to do that section.
Yeah, the Baker cypress is the hardest conifer to get. You have to go off the trail pretty far. So tell me about your favorite conifer that you saw along the route.
Well, you know, at first I thought it was going to be Brewer's spruce because I always liked that conifer because it reminds me of the weeping willow in my front yard because it has such a dangly kind of like wonderful branching habit, kind of. But then I thought, you know, the conifer I always celebrate when I'm on the trail, no matter where I go, is it's the yew, the Pacific yew. Because when I see it as a survivor of past wetter times. Plus, it's the originator of where Taxol comes from for fighting breast cancer. And so I'm always, there's so few of them when you see them, and I'm going, oh my God, this tree is like a relic of a past time, and I really like it.
Nice. Yeah, it's a tough one to get to know, but once you get to know it, you kind of see them a little bit more than you might expect. So neat one to love. Yeah. So you've hiked the trail, you've been through the Klamath, you've had the experience going up and down and over the Bigfoot country, I guess you could call it, conifer country. What do you see as something for the future for the Bigfoot Trail and the Bigfoot Trail Alliance as we move forward? What do you see are the immediate needs of the trail?
Well, I think that one of the immediate needs, and probably the most immediate need, is just to work with the government agencies to try to upgrade some of the treads that have been neglected in the past. And I think that that would be a big help, because I used a GPS a lot on this trail. And I knew that the trail was under all that ceanothus, and it was there someplace. But it would be nice to have more of an assurance at the end of the day, when you've been hiking 15 miles, that you're not going to be losing the trail at the end of the day.
Yeah, I hiked that Yolaboli section this summer. It's tough. It's tough right now. So, yeah, we need to get out there and do some work. Well, Mary, I really appreciate your time and your experiences on the trail. And thanks a lot for your interview.
Oh, thank you. I really enjoyed it a lot. And I'm going to go back and do that 50-mile section to the Siskiyous, because ironically, that was the one section, the one wilderness area I'd never been to, and I wanted to go there, but I was stopped at the Poker Flat Trailhead.
All right, well, you'll see the Siskiyous soon. Thanks again.
This podcast was brought to you by Backcountry Press, independent publisher of web and print media, whose themes explore natural history, ecology, and the Western landscape. Visit backcountrypress.com. One title you might find of interest is my book, Conifer Country, an innovative natural history and hiking guide that uses conifers as a lens to explore the astounding plant diversity in the Klamath Mountains.